with some other people in Charleston, to a certain amount of good money. We just repeated what we found, that we interpreted and miniaturized the city in their small project. That's something which occupied us since quite a while, in the 50s, in the early 50s, and then in the 60s, in college office, last part of my lecture. This town in which we stayed
in Cologne, when we are there, is actually a commentary on the street, of which it is a part of, which is that little scene. And the house comments on that particular scene. It exists of several different houses, of several different smaller pieces, like, for instance, that little rotunda sitting in a big rotunda, making comments of little pieces sticking out on the street to which it belongs. We sometimes took, as another comment, the elements which we found, for instance, when Gilly did a monument for Frederick the Great, he built the bases and had the Parthenon on top of it. When we did a project later on for the Potsdamer Platz, we took the bases from Gilly and put another building on top of that. Or the building sometimes casts its own shadow, like in this little project in Berlin, where there was an existing house in which we lived and we wanted to build another one, which casted the shadow, or was the reverse from the first one, because this one was made in stone with holes punched through, and the other one was in glass, and the windows became solid. Or another little comment on two little towers we did in Berlin, which has a lot of layers of different meanings. Not only that we found a little monument in a cemetery in Holland, the one side is Protestant and the other side is Catholic, and after the death there was a reunion, we found it was quite an interesting statement on the city of Berlin. We have houses on one side and on the other side. And we had to do a project in an area where there was also, by accident, a medieval wall, which separated an inside from the outside. And we built those two little houses. The wall, of course, acted in a very pragmatic way as a protector against the noise from a street which goes by, because the one side is a residential unit, the other side is a commercial unit. The one is a reversal from the other one. You could also have the analogy of Paramus and Thisbe and so on, talking through a crack. The miniaturization of buildings, like for instance in that of areas of situations, like for instance the little chair, sitting on the gigantic chair in Magritte's painting, like that little Manhattan sitting on the opposite of Manhattan. So you would be in the small Manhattan, look at the big one, or you could be in the big one and look at the small one. And sometimes we took actual direct quotes and elements from paintings, translated them into architectural objects, like in this exhibition space where we took a Magritte painting, translated it into a situation to represent a sort of continuous space which conflicts with a linear space. So you've got these two dialectical statements of space being in this little room. Or we took Magritte paintings and we translated them directly into a space in order to create a highly artificial atmosphere for the museum in Cologne, which is the entrance space here. And we translated Magritte's Unquiet Muses in the entrance. Or then we took elements from the environment, like for instance King William II with a bird on his hat, who is guarding the bridge, together with the light code and that medieval tower, which is a combination which only can happen in a city with a long historical tradition. You get this kind of juxtaposition. We played on that with King William II here being put together four times, because he is standing on the bridge four times, and then added other elements to it to recreate this kind of surreal atmosphere in a situation. The museum itself is actually a piece of the Roman part of Cologne, and it has a sequence of those three plaza services for King William II here, which go through the entrance, then through the four glass boxes, to that open space here, which is covered with a tree roof and has the Stancia exhibition. We started, this was the situation where actually located the museum. We started by making a comment on the medieval part, on the Roman part of Cologne. And this is the other hotel which we did for Berlin just recently, which we are going to build. And it is the object in an object, or the box in a box, or the building in a building. And it leads actually to what I'm probably going to talk about, which will be the city within the city. It's the same way as Schinkel, for instance, and that is the next topic of my little presentation this afternoon, is probably Schinkel, as the learning source. You know, Schinkel took the Parthenon as an object, as a complete object, and put it into his building for the Altes Museum in Berlin. At the moment, we are working, there's some other topic which I would like to introduce before I talk about the city. At the moment, we are working on a museum in Leverkusen, close to Cologne, which is a situation where the Baroque Museum, the Baroque Castle, which is turned into a museum, or will be turned into a museum, is sitting on an island in a park, and we are adding a new building, which is a linear structure, that at the same time performs as an arcade for the museum. But it has a few other things. It starts as a rather solid wall structure, and slowly, in several steps, in several transitions, dissolves until it is finally built in trees. And Colin talked about that too. If you don't know what you do with buildings, you build in trees, and then it's eaten up, chewed up, and disintegrates in existing buildings, in existing trees, which are at the moment on the island. The only thing we added to the structure was this square, because the circle is here, to make two very strong geometric forms in the center. Now, the plan of that building is the transformation of a space, and it's probably one of the first, it's a topic which is with us since quite a while, and it's probably one of the first opportunities to have a space which goes through a morphological transformation and represents a continuum. It's a space which has cabinets here, and then the parallel wall structure, and then those galleries, it becomes a double space, a huge sort of sculpture hall, and then open ateliers under the trees, and then disintegrates in the natural agglomeration of trees. On the other hand, the change goes through the content. There is a building which is a little painting school, a lecture hall, and then a series of little houses. But it's all contained within the same framework, and it goes through spatial transition, so you would have possibilities. The question was not to exhibit something only in one way, or to come up with ideas of flexibility for space, and all this kind of thing that people are talking about, that you could always change it if you wanted, nobody's going to change it anyways, because it stays always as it is. So, but here, you would have small rooms to exhibit small pieces. You would have a large two-story room to exhibit large sculptural pieces with totally different light here, this complete sort of artificial light here, and then the transitions in between. Now, we discovered by looking at the Schinkel Park in Kliniker, we were always pretty much going around to discover a situation, a sort of transformational scene, and learn from it. Like, for instance, the tree stump, which turns in that park into a basis for a column, and then you see that column only as the beginning, as a piece, and finally the column develops into a isolated object, into an element which competes with the trees. And it's no accident that this tree has a Corinthian capital on it because of the direct relationship to the natural environment. But then the column is used as a very expressed object to define a corner in a church, which I will show three times during the lecture, which was brought over from Minor Asia and then turned in and reassembled and assembled again in a different order, in a classical order, by using all the pieces, but in a different order. And then finally, the column becomes an object with a bird on it, so it becomes a very special object, but the bird is in bronze, it's not a natural bird. So it's even a further exaggeration of the column as an isolated piece. And then the column turns into the human body. So you get this kind of continuum between the tree stump on the one side and the column as a human body on the other side, and the whole series of interpretations and stages in between, which we employed in the space in the museum in a much simpler and much directer way. Now, this order also can be turned in such a way that it doesn't go sort of logically in morphological steps, but is conflicting with each other, with this little temple in Philae, where you get sort of an abstract structure, which is one definition of the temple. You get a wall structure, which is another definition of the temple. And you get those flower-like or tree-like columns, which is another, a third interpretation of the structure. Magritte did the same thing in a time-lapse situation here, transforming a bottle into a body, into a human body. Now, pretty early in the 60s, in the 50s and in the 60s, we got involved in Durand's theory and his typological exercises. And he's basically doing what I expressed in the, what I showed you with the Schinkel part and with the Magritte, finding the transformation of the square and the possible configuration it would do, or the circle or the rectangle. In 1960, Johannes Geist and Savard, two students of mine and I, we started to develop a theory, or tried to develop a theory of forms, which never got printed and which never has been shown, and it's only in sketches and hundreds of little drawings in the archive. Now, the theory was based on the transformation of the three basic forms of the circle, the triangle, and the square, and then combination and also a whole range of transformation, for instance, like addition, a sequence of additions, a sequence of contraction, and so on and so forth. I can only show you two of those sketches, but the result of that theory, as I said, which never got developed, which never was published, was a project which we did for Anschede, for a little student house. And at that time, I guess I can say this was Colin's most appreciated project. And it actually is a theoretical and also a practical application of that transformation theory which we developed by taking three individual buildings, a square, a triangle, and a circle, and transforming it through different stages into a complex situation in the center, with the problems of configurations, which of course become fragments, or if you would like to see this, that this solid here is reversed here into a void. The same happens with the square. And it also had more than that. I had in mind to build sort of a model or a miniaturized city with that kind of form theory, because this project has all the elements, or the basic elements, of a city, which means it has the isolated singular buildings, it has the street and the street buildings, and it has the plazas and the complexes in the center. Also in terms of, and then it has sort of kind of combinations of different things, like a terrace house, a step back house. It is practically a catalog of all the existing, at that time, basic forms, housing forms, but put together in a theory of a transformation of a morphological development as a model for an entire city. You would have individual living here in the individual houses. You would have collective living here. What is the private chair here becomes theater in the center. What is the flower in the private room becomes the little grove. And what is the sitting area in the private room can become this little place for Blaine Boole. And what is the table becomes the platform to stand on to address an audience. The living here is totally independent. The living here is completely integrated. You have to take the context here is that not only the bathroom is collective, but also the other rooms like dining rooms and so on are collective, and nothing is collective here. Everything is individualized. So it had this whole sort of total idea of all the conflicting elements being put together into one statement. It was always compared, and is compared by Charles Jenks and others, as one of, just read it in the AD, as one of the early postmodern buildings, which I didn't know, and he didn't intend it, and then he compared it with the Villa Hadriani, and it might have some textual relationship to it, because also the Villa Hadriani is composed of a series of totally different statements. In this case, buildings which were collected from all over the world and brought the world known at that time and brought together into a constellation in the villa. This is the project with the streets, with the objects, with the little theater, with the public green, with the public table, with the row house in between, and so on. Now, this project was rather influential to us in our thoughts during a long period of time, and the only thing that we could realize was a little building, a house, which we did at the same time when we were working on the theory and on the Enschede project, which is, of course, like a mini-city, if you wish, because it exists of four different houses, like the garage, which is a house, like that little tower, which is the library, like the kitchen house, the bedroom house, and they are all built around a public plaza. So that's the only thing which we could realize from the great idea of that mini city, which we tried to do. Now, approximately at the same time, and I apologize for the color, because I was looking for black and white slides. I know Colin doesn't like color slides, but I didn't find one. Around the same time, we did a project for the embassy in Rome. And the embassy actually is a collection, if you wish, of Roman buildings. It's a Roman courtyard house here. It's a basilica here. It's a galleria here. And it has this piece as an open galleria. So it collects buildings, reinterprets them out of an historical context, and it's actually a collage. It even has a little Corbusier piece in it. This one here, the entrance here, we took from a Corbusier design and put it in. It is a, if you wish, also a direct comment and a sort of almost literal statement regarding the Forum Romanum, and looks almost exactly like it. The only thing we could build from those things, from those ideas, was a little house also near close to Cologne, which dwells on those elements of the tower, of the triangular building, and so on. And we could capture a little bit of the idea which we had for that house, which was a city, which was a mini city within the big city. It was conceived like that. And that was the rest. Now, in 1963, and I have to go back into a little bit of this historical business, because I know that the history is not well known if you look at the current publication, and I also know that it is a little bit distorted. This then was 1963, when we did a museum in Berlin, actually five museums, and the entry was rejected completely because everybody thought it was an absolute ridiculous, eclectic piece, and didn't have any chance to survive with the jurors. They were looking for a megastructure at that time, much more rational, and nothing of this sort. Now, what that building does, these are the five museums, this is a museum for artifact, which is actually a piece of the medieval castle of Berlin. This is a museum for Roman pieces, which is the plan, you might recognize it if I would show it to you in plan, but I don't have the time. It's the plan of the Diocletian Palace in Split. This is a machine hall, which is the cultural exhibition, where we dwell to a certain extent on that famous Behrens machine hall, and so on. So it collects pieces from Berlin as individual pieces and builds a sort of mini city, reincarnation or miniature statement on the big city. It also collects a galleria, which does exist in Berlin, but it also sort of makes a comment on the block structure. Berlin is totally different from Cologne. The Cologne building, the museum, is a piece of those Roman plazas and sequence. But as a building, it is a pedestrian circulation. It is a section of a building. It is a totally distorted, it is a non-object and an object building at the same time. It is something which you can never really detect what it is, because if you look at the city of Cologne, it is completely distorted by history, by overlaying, by different overlaying sequences. In Berlin, it's much clearer. The city is basically a city, or it's basically, if you look at it in a morphological sense, basically a structure of blocks. Now, these are the ordinary blocks, and also they become more and more refined depending what the function is. This was a street pattern where Rob Krier talks about. But there are very refined blocks in Berlin. Like, for instance, the Museum Island in the center. Our project was again a second museum island, if you wish, with the Altes Museum by Schinkel, with the Nationalgalerie by Stühler, with the Museum for the Pergamon Altar, with Langhans Museum for painting, the painting gallery, the Staatsgalerie, and so on. So it is an agglomeration of very refined buildings containing a very special function. And if you go further, and this is where we took off, you find in the center of Berlin the castle, the armory house, the cathedral, old museum by Schinkel, an ordinary housing block. So all of a sudden, a collection of blocks being even more refined than the one which were determined by one function only, but in this case by different functions, forming the major center of forming an urban and highly determined urban environment. And Schinkel knew that. And he, in the Gendarmenmarkt, arranged those blocks here. Two churches which were already there, which are two sort of twin churches by, I think it was Knobelsdorf, and the Schauspielhaus, the theater in the center, arranged as a scene in a city, as a backdrop, or as Colin says, as a sort of a panorama for a theater in a very extreme fashion, and then for the opening of the theater I think it was in 1870 at Christmas, and they played Goethe's Iphigenia of Tauris. Schinkel drew the panorama for the play, which was exactly the outside of the Gendarmenmarkt. So as a visitor, you came to the Gendarmenmarkt into the urban scene with those very strongly formalized blocks. You went into the theater and you found the same situation painted on, as a panorama on the stage. I mean, can you imagine this incredible incredible tension which, in terms of urban space, is beginning to develop? Now, this museum was part, or is, that was part of this arrangement here of highly refined urban blocks, like the Sharon Philharmonic Hall, National Gallery, the Stühler Church, and so on. And this was the setting for the museum, the Hall, Philharmonic Hall, the Mies Museum is there, the Stühler Church, and then the rest of the buildings, which I explained to you what they meant in this particular scheme. So it is the setting of a strongly formalized urban environment. Now, what we learned and why I learned and found this, and I'm always coming back to Schinkel, I'm always coming back to a situation which is the Kleinecker Park, you will see in the very next part of it. Because here, the ideas of a arrangement of blocks of different quality, of different expressions, with different faces, is most strongly expressed in this castle, Schinkel, which is a courtyard building. Schinkel did one building in the style of, in a Florentine style, and the other one, which is part of the courtyard, in a classical style. And when they constructed that little church, it was Stühler and Schinkel, in the Kleinecker Park, which they brought in from Minor Asia, they decomposed it completely into the elements, like columns, like little elements here, and recompositioned it in a completely different order. So you got a piece of a galleria here, you got a freestanding column as an object, and you got a church with a courtyard and a building behind it. They found a classical, or if you wish, a humanist interpretation of that situation, not taking the object and just in an eclectic way, they recomposed it and put their own interpretation of it. The same is true of those arrangements in the park, which are pieces of memory, pieces of history, collected and put together as fragments, sometimes contradicting each other, as different statements in history, in the history of architecture, and in the history of culture. And the city is nothing else in Berlin but a collection of those pieces which are laying around as fragments, contradicting each other, or, if you wish, complementing each other, because it's not an antagonist kind of thing, as it was not the idea in the humanist concept that they would be seen antagonistically. They were seen complementary, because a culture had to have that broad base of historic background with different, Colin talked about it, with different interpretations in it. Now, the city consists of this medieval part, of the part from the 18th century, which is the rectilinear part there, which was the first extension, and the third fragment here, which is a sort of ad hoc development in the city. It has a few elements which were added in the Baroque time, like those three plazas. So Berlin can be read in the same way, and there's actually later on a city with many cities, cities within the cities forming one big environment, which is, for instance, here, the city of Adolf Hitler, which Colin showed at the first slide, and it's actually the big axis by Speer, which actually had the center with the dome for the people. That extension of Frederick the Great from the 18th century into the 19th, and the medieval part, or the city which developed later on in a concentric city of the Crédit Lecteur from the 17th century.